For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle. Mr. Timothy O'Donnell is taking an extended vacation. I can't say I blame him. It's still the holidays. He's probably got that turkey hangover and still trying to get past that.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to kind of overdo it and overeat over the holidays. I don't know if that's Tim's excuse, but
well, I'll give it as my own excuse, but I'm just, you know, kind of still propped up here in the chair. So,
yep.
Mark, beginning of the new year, we got all kinds of resolutions and things to do, and people are looking at ways that they can, you know, be more committed and do more with their lives and those kinds of things. And I know a lot of folks, this is the time of year when they say, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to do more for the church. What can I do for the church? And then they kind of narrow it down to, well, you know, maybe I'll sing in the choir, or maybe I'll join the men's club, or maybe I'll do this. But the big question I have, and you're probably uniquely qualified to answer this question, or to at least approach it, is, you know, we are called to share the faith, to evangelize. There's that big word that, you know, there's evangelicals and then there's evangelizing. And, you know, I've said this before, you know, the concept of a Catholic evangelist almost sounds like an oxymoron.
Yeah. And, you know, especially this time of year, I think we as Catholics, we hear that word during Christmas. You know, we hear, you know, the gospel proclaimed to the shepherds, and the shepherds immediately went and they told everybody. And we as Catholics go, oh, you know, it was very nice of them that they wanted to do that, you know. and so, you know, there's a dual trick to it. On the one hand, we feel the joy of Christmas. And so as we're coming off of the Christmas season, we still feel that joy. We still feel this compulsion to carry that joy out to the rest of the world. But we have no idea how to do it. And then I think also there's a little bit of that background Catholic guilt that says, you know, as Catholics, we know this is something we should do. But quite frankly, it's something that we're not comfortable with. It's out of our comfort zone. And honestly, we're kind of bad at it.
Well, you know, and it's one of those things when you look at how Catholics are educated, or I should look at it this way. Catholics, at least my generation and several generations afterwards, I think Al Cresta uses the term. He says, we are well sacramentalized, but we're not catechized. And when we have doubts about our faith, when we don't know the answers, it's hard to share what we aren't confident in.
Right. We're terrified of being stumped. And particularly when it comes to talking to evangelical Protestants, we're terrified they're going to have questions for us that we're not prepared to answer. You know, I think there's this ongoing battle going on, and it's made up in our heads. I don't think this is real at all. But we feel the compulsion to go out and talk to our evangelical Protestant friends, and they feel the compulsion to talk to us about Catholicism. And, you know, we're trying to kind of convert each other. So there's this sort of game going on of who's going to win, who's going to be able to convert the other.
You know, it's a challenge sometimes because, you know, one of the things that I've noticed over the years and, you know, working here at Catholic Radio Indy, I listen to a lot of the programs on the station. And if you listen, there's a particular show in the evening called Catholic Answers. And when Catholic Answers is on, I tend to listen to, you know, what are the new questions that are coming up? Because a lot of times the same questions come up over and over again, especially when they've opened their lines to non-Catholics. We get those same questions. What's the deal with Mary? What's the deal with saints? What's the deal with... And, you know, a lot of those people who went through Catholic education and are my age and maybe a few years younger, if we haven't gone back and restudied those things and what's taught on those things, we're stumped.
Yeah. And not only are we stumped, but I also think we never feel like we have the full answer the adequate answer, because to a certain extent there is no full answer. You know, we're constantly learning more about Mary. We're constantly learning more about the saints. As we continue to say the rosary, the depth of the spirituality of Mary, the importance that she has to the church, the role that she has in salvation, it becomes more and more apparent to us, but we have a hard time articulating it, particularly as it gets more and more deep and more a part of our life.
You know, it's a challenge when, you know, I've had a number of Protestant friends who they'll come to, you know, a Catholic funeral, a Catholic wedding, and afterwards they walk up and they say, okay, why do you do this? You know, what's with the sign of the cross and what's with the water at the doors and those kinds of things? And it's like, do I know the answer to that? I used to know the answer to that. I remember that from catechism in first, second, and third grade, but then we switched over to religion classes and kind of got away from that. And so, yeah, I think I remember that. But, you know, trying to explain it to someone, you know, do we have the words? Do we have the grounding that we need to make that happen?
Right. And all of those things are part and parcel of the fullness of the Catholic faith. So we as Catholics, when we go to Mass, we make the sign of the cross. We might remember from our catechism that, you know, this is the seal. You know, this is how God calls us by name. He's calling us using his name and putting his seal on us. That's what the sign of the cross is about. We might or might not remember that from catechism. But nonetheless, you know, we do it. It's part of the faith. It's part of the whole picture. So when it gets broken down into little tiny bits and pieces, when people have questions about it, it's hard to come up with that answer right off the top of your head.
You know, and I think another part of the challenge simply comes from the fact that, you know, with many of the Protestant churches and, you know, many of the evangelical churches are so much based in Scripture. You've got your Sola Scriptura group out there. And it's a matter of, that's what you need to know. You need to know the Bible and those Gospels and those epistles. And once you know that, you're done. On the other hand, when you're Catholic, you've got the Bible, you've got the Gospels, you've got the epistles, and then you got 2,000 years of some of the greatest thinkers who have written about what's in that simple little book we call the Bible.
Right. And, you know, Tim and I, we enjoy that. We enjoy that 2,000-year intellectual tradition. Obviously, that's kind of the basis of this show, is to try to dig as deep into the well of Catholic thought as possible to be able to get the background of contemporary issues that are coming up, trying to find those central truths that are behind every single headline and every single kind of current event that's going on. That's why we exist. But Tim and I know we're kind of weird. We live in a cave, and you know, we're cave dwellers, and that kind of sets us apart a little bit. Not everybody's like that. Not everybody wants to you know, sort through and do that kind of intense deep study to come up with the answers to these questions.
You know, I don't think we are, as Catholics, are called to, you know, study the entire Summa Theologica and, you know, everything that Thomas Aquinas ever wrote, or everything that Augustine ever wrote. And, you know, when we look at these things, you know, if we can just get a feel for what they're about and how they steered the church to where it is today, how they developed and how those are the foundations for what the church teaches and what it brings into modern life, then, you know, just a basic foundation is enough to build a faith on.
And a basic foundation that's a basic relationship. You know, we think of the church as this institution, very impersonal. We think of all the writings and the intellectual tradition. But the fact of the matter is, the church is a living being. We're the bride of Christ as the church. And as the bride of Christ, we have a relationship with the church. And that relationship, as a Catholic, has to be built on a foundation of trust. And I think that's really kind of where those questions that these Protestants have for us come from. They don't have the relationship with the church to have the trust that just because I don't know the answers doesn't mean that it's not true, doesn't mean that it's wrong, doesn't mean that it's not something that was just made up. Since we have that relationship with Mother Church, we trust her as her children. And so even if we don't have all the answers, we can be assured that this truly is the right answer.
You know, I think one of the biggest challenges that we have is finding that balance between a knowledge of God and knowing God. There's a difference. There's an intellectual knowledge of God, and then there's the spiritual connection with God through Jesus.
Right. And that spiritual connection isn't built up through studying. It's not built up through reading. It can be, but usually it's built up through the habits that you have in your daily life, living as a Catholic in really this world that's out there. And that we do have in common with our evangelical Christian brethren. I mean, that's a common call for all Christians that we all participate in, regardless of the degree of the truth that we know, the truth that we're living, and the truth that we're trusting and following.
And, you know, well, that one of the things that we're challenged with as Catholics is developing those habits that bring about a greater spirituality in our lives. And there are opportunities for us to grow in our faith and everything. And one of those is the subject of our interview today. We're going to be talking with Dr. Alan Hunt from the Dynamic Catholic Institute. He's going to be bringing a presentation to St. Rock Catholic Church on January 19th. Begins at 9 a.m. Tickets are available. Go to dynamiccatholic.com. And he's going to be talking about four habits that have been noted as the starting point for a greater relationship with God: prayer, study, generosity, and evangelization. Just in our opening segment here, we've covered three of those. Now, you know, we're going to be generous in the fact that we're going to sit back and give our time and our listening effort to Dr. Alan Hunt. And we'll be back with that in that interview right after this break.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest? Or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a ministry reaching out to Central Indiana and beyond. We have information available about what's happening in parishes here in the Hoosier Heartland, as well as access to the latest from Rome, plus apologetics and authentic Catholic teaching. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here in the cave with Kent Blandford. And today, Kent, we continue to be Timless, but we have a fantastic guest with us today. We have Dr. Alan Hunt of the Dynamic Catholic Institute. Welcome to the cave, Dr. Hunt.
Always good to be in the cave, man. Always good to be in the cave.
Yep. So I noticed that you are a fellow convert as well. My wife and I came into the church, oh gosh, it was probably about, I've kind of lost track, it was probably about 18 years ago now, and have happily been Catholic for 18 years. My wife was Lutheran. I was raised Methodist. And after a journey of kind of study for probably about 3 or 4 years, we decided to come into the Catholic Easter of right around 1999, I believe it was. But well, your journey was quite a bit longer than that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess I came into the church on Feast of the Epiphany, so kind of a new year in 2008, so 11 years ago. But yeah, it took me, Mark, it was 16, 18 years, and really not being intentional during all that, just sort of things kind of percolating, evolving. As you know, I was a Protestant pastor for 20 years, and was very close friends with a Dominican friar who was my best friend in graduate school and is still my best friend today. And just through that friendship, began to kind of ask questions and began to think about things. And so this sort of percolated over those 16 or 18 years. So I'm a slow learner, Mark. I'm a slow learner.
Well, I think there's a trend within American Catholicism of a lot of evangelical Christians converting. Obviously, there's a lot more evangelical Christians that haven't converted yet. But, I think there's this ongoing trend, and it's changing the complexion a lot, in my opinion, of American Catholicism. American Catholicism is becoming more of an evangelical Catholicism with certain characteristics that people like you and others who've converted are bringing over from evangelical Christianity. What would you say is probably some of the larger gifts that you bring to the church as a convert and, from your background as a former evangelical pastor?
That's an interesting question. It's funny, people very rarely ask me that perspective. And my first thought before I talk somewhat about my own stuff is, I live in Atlanta, and the Catholic Church in the northern half of Georgia, which is the Archdiocese of Atlanta, 25, 30 years ago, there were about 250,000 Catholics, and now there's a million. So it's quadrupled in 20 to 30 years or so. And it's interesting to see in Atlanta, and be interested to hear your perspective from things in Indiana and Indianapolis in particular. In Atlanta, because we are in the middle of the Bible Belt, and it is such a heavily Baptist and evangelical presence here, how that in some ways has really energized the Catholic Church. And lots of folks who move here from other places come, and they go, wow, these parishes are more vibrant than where I've moved from. And I think part of that is just being in the environment of so many ardent, passionate evangelicals. I think that has an impact on parishes in a couple of ways. One is, I think it makes you you tend to find a bit of a stronger sense of community and family and belonging in parishes. I think that is an emphasis that I would say that I myself and other evangelicals would have brought over, is a sense of home, a sense of family and belonging, and that oftentimes energizes parishes. And then the second thing is, I'm an evangelist at heart, Mark. I mean, when I came into the church, folks asked me about, do you think you should be a deacon? Do you think God's calling you to be a priest? And those kind of things. I think fundamentally I'm an evangelist. And Catholics in America, there's a shortage of evangelists that want to go out and share our story, invite other people to experience that story. So really, it's kind of that's really how Matthew Kelly and I became friends. As evangelists, we found each other and went, hey, we have the same heart, and there aren't a lot of us. Let's partner together.
Yeah, when my wife and I came into the church, we were living in North Texas, so another very heavily Baptist, Protestant area. And the city we lived in was about 90,000 to 100,000 people, and there were two Catholic parishes. So, I think that alone explains a lot of this sense of community. But one of my friends who was Baptist, he was always asking, now, why do you Catholics not go out to the unchurched? You guys seem, when you talk, you seem to talk primarily to Protestants, and part of our answer back to him was, well, that's because you Baptists have done such a good job of converting the population that I don't know a lot of unchurched people. But I guess that raises a bigger question of what is it about evangelization and about going out and spreading the word that seems, I won't say it's anathema to Catholics, but it definitely doesn't seem to necessarily go along with what most people picture as Catholicism.
Yeah, and that's been one of the things that has struck me the most in making the transition into the church 11 years ago is, and I think there are a lot of reasons for that. That's probably another show for another day to talk about all of that. But I think one of the key things is we have so many people who've left the church, the Catholic Church, over the last 25 years. And those are the people who are most receptive to Catholicism. You know, Catholicism can be very complicated, and it can be a bit off-putting to folks who don't have any familiarity with it. It's oftentimes what I hear is it's not user friendly. I don't understand what's going on. I don't understand. I need sort of a basic 101 course to find my way in. And so it's much easier for us to have conversations either with Protestants or with primarily fallen away Catholics. Who most fallen away Catholics don't become Protestant. Most of them actually just go do nothing. They just sort of lapse and are not spiritually active in any kind of faith tradition other than just kind of doing it on their own.
Yeah, you know, they say, unfortunately, that the, you know, when you break it down into denominations, you know, the single largest denomination is former Catholics.
There's more former Catholics than there are Southern Baptists, which, I mean, that's a big number.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Which brings us a little bit. You're going to be coming to Indianapolis here in a week or so to St. Rock Parish to, kind of trying to energize that parish a little bit. And working a little bit on, I guess what I would say would be kind of the virtue side of Catholicism. So, you know, virtues are habits that you acquire through practicing them and continuing to practice them. And that's part of the Catholic philosophical landscape that a lot of times, you know, we speak in morality and ethics and in terms of virtue. That's one of the, I don't know, when we communicate with Protestants, we sometimes have to kind of explain that a little bit. But you're going to be coming to St. Rock Parish to, I think, encourage some of the, central virtues of being Catholic there among that parish. Can you tell us a little bit more about that that conference that's coming up?
Yeah, I'll be there for a half day on the 19th, Mark, on a Saturday morning from 9 until 1. And this is an event that Matthew and I designed at Dynamic Catholic that we call Find Your Greatness, that as Pope Benedict reminded us, you know, we weren't made for comfort, we were made for greatness. And so if we are made for greatness, how do we pursue that? And so this is not really a philosophical or theological day. This is a very practical, inspirational day. So it's 4 hours to really inspire people, to coach them, and to give them very real ways of living into the four life-changing habits that through our research at Dynamic Catholic over the years we've found to be the four habits. If you begin to implement these slowly but surely in your life, you'll begin to see an immense spiritual return in your life and a deepening of your faith and a love for Christ and a love for the church. And so it'll be three talks, have some music, it'll be some good humor and some good fun. But at the end of the day, each person will walk away with their own personalized plan for what's their one next step, which is perfect time of year as you're thinking about what am I going to do in 2019 so that when Christmas rolls around at the end of 2019, I don't say, well, I'm in the same place spiritually that I was back in January. It's a perfect day at St. Rock from 9 to 1 on the 19th to find your greatness and to learn those four habits.
Yeah, and you know, that ties in perfectly with what we were talking about a little while ago about evangelization, that, you know, the act of evangelizing is often more living a godly life that other people can notice, can emulate, and ask questions about, quite honestly. You know, they see the way you do things. They see the way you conduct yourself. They see the way you live. And then based on that, that opens up opportunities to be able to talk with other people about the faith and be able to explain a little bit about why you live the way you do.
Yeah. I mean, that as you begin to implement these habits, you begin to pursue the greatness that God has in store for each one of us, and each of us is made uniquely, as we know, so your greatness will look different than mine. But God's got a plan for us, and when we begin to actually live that, I mean, life-changing things tend to be life-changing. It changes your life. And so and when you do that, as you and I know, Mark, other people find holiness be very attractive, because it, particularly in this culture of ours that's growing increasingly coarse and seemingly angry, that holiness stands out in very simple ways. So when you become a compassionate person, when you become a prayerful person, when you become a generous person, those things stand out, and they do. Other people are attracted to that because that's what God made us for.
Yeah, and that attraction is so important too, because I think, you know, a lot of times, I think we lose track of how mysterious and otherworldly God can be. And, you know, Christ came to earth to be among us as a human being. We just got done celebrating Christmas, you know, a whole big feast of Christ being incarnate. But now here on earth, he left us as spirit so that we could be that physical presence of God as the church to the rest of the world. And, you know, that attractiveness, that reminder that, you know, even if people don't believe in God, even a lot of times they'll see that reminder of what holiness can be. And they like it. You know, they're attracted to it and they want to know more about it. So they ask more questions. So in a lot of ways, you know, the best ways to evangelize is simply to live out your Catholic faith.
Yeah, I mean, would you rather be friends with a person who's generous or a person who's stingy? I mean, would you rather be friends with somebody, with a person who's honest or a person who's dishonest? So, I mean, virtue does stand out. I mean, people like to be friends with folks who are generous. They like to be friends with people who are kind. They like to be friends with people who are prayerful, even though they may not necessarily understand the wellspring from where that comes from. But I think we live in such a transactional culture where I go online and I purchase this and it's at my doorstep within hours, and I go through the drive-thru and I get my food in an instant and I can eat in an instant. Conversion and evangelism, it's not transactional, it's not instantaneous. It took me 16, 18 years. It took you and your wife a decade to figure out what God was doing in our life, just on that one part of becoming Catholic. And if you're somebody that doesn't really have a spiritual relationship with God or any kind of real awareness of Christianity or Jesus, that's not something that just sort of happens in a moment. And so there's lots of little seeds planted, lots of water applied, lots of sunshine applied over the years, even decades. And so giving people that in your own life where they see that you're consistently an honest person or you're consistently a generous person or consistently, boy, you're the most patient person I know. Why is that? You know, over time, it has an impact. It really does. And that's what leads to genuine conversion.
Yeah. And that conversion and that genuine witness of the faith, nowadays, it's just as important to be that witness to your own family as it is to others outside your family. You know, we grow up in a secular world with a secular culture, and a lot of times, all of the different influences that are bombarding our kids and our grandkids, that starts to wear on them. And you know, having the strong faith at the center of your household and the center of your family, having that beacon of faith helps in some ways draw our kids back to the faith, but it also, I mean, it helps, I guess, kind of reconvert our kids or our grandkids as they might be tempted to fall away.
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly as we've seen over the last decade or so, in many, many ways, our primary mission field really is in our own home. It's in our own marriages, it's in our own kids, it's in our own relationships in the family, because faith tends to be caught more than taught. And so you tend to, I mean, the greatest predictor for a child's spiritual future is the spiritual life of their parents, and secondly, is the spiritual life of their grandparents. You know, I shared with you not long ago that I just released a book a couple weeks ago called Dreams for Your Grandchild, The Hidden Power of a Catholic Grandparent, because the number one question I get without exception when I travel to speak, and I'll probably get this from somebody at St. Rock on the 19th after the event. Somebody will come up to me and they'll say, you know, I'm a grandparent and I'm really, really deeply concerned about my grandkids. I don't think that they're getting the faith. I'm concerned that Catholicism's going to be lost to them. What can I do? And after getting that question so many dozens, maybe even hundreds of times, I finally said, okay, I'm going to write a book. First of all, that shows the evidence for the tremendous impact. I mean, there's great data out there showing the tremendous impact that a grandparent can, if he or she chooses, have on a grandchild, and particularly on that child's faith. And so dreaming with your grandchild about what your grandchild's future is going to be, it's what the book is about, and then giving some very, very practical tips to help grandparents, which also help parents, by the way, to help children flourish, and also to help their spirituality, to help their faith life flourish, because like you just alluded to, Mark, the culture that our kids and our grandkids are growing up in is growing increasingly toxic and almost antithetical to the faith, and so that puts even more of an onus on us as parents and grandparents to make sure that we're embedding that that spirituality, those deep roots in Christ in our kids and grandkids.
We are talking with Dr. Alan Hunt of Dynamic Catholicism, and we got to take a quick break, Dr. Hunt, but we'll be right back here on the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a voice for the church that's seldom heard in our chaotic world. We're confirmation for the strong of faith and encouragement and answers for those in doubt. We're there to rejoice with your triumphs and to be a voice of consolation through the dark times. We're a voice for vocations and proudly pro-life. We are Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Kent Blanford, and we have online with us Dr. Alan Hunt of Dynamic Catholicism. And Dr. Hunt, we were just talking about before our break the importance of looking at our families as that field for evangelization. You know, I think when we think of evangelism, we think first and foremost of going out to our coworkers, going out to those people around us. But in today's culture, it's more and more important to evangelize our families. And you just wrote a book called Dreams for Your Grandchild, The Hidden Power of a Catholic Grandparent. And part of what you're getting at with that book is how I guess a grandparent has sort of a privileged perspective and a privileged place within a grandchild's life to be able to help bring the faith alive in that child's life.
Right. In two ways. One is, as I mentioned to you, Mark, that the data shows, I mean, there's great research out like Columbia University, a woman named Lisa Miller up there, and then in other places, and from Notre Dame, from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, great evidence of the tremendous impact that grandparents can have on their grandkids when they're intentional about it. And I think part of that is that privileged position is that you're able to have conversations with your grandchildren that parents oftentimes are having to be concerned about eating and bathing and schooling and disciplining and those kinds of things. Grandparents have a tremendous gift of being able just to have carefree timelessness, just to be with your grandchild and to love your grandchild, your grandchildren, simply just being with them, playing with them, listening to them, having lots of silly conversations and giving them a place where they really feel valued and loved and worthwhile. And that's a tremendous place from which you build trust and you build that love that nobody else has access to be able to do that. And it's from that springs forth your faith life and springs forth how you view God and how you encounter the faith. So grandparents have a tremendous power if they tap into that. A lot of grandparents, either because of distance or because of divorce, there's a lot of challenges. But in the book, Dreams for Your Grandchild, I talk about those and provide different kinds of suggestions for grandparents in different kinds of settings, not to give up on that just because you live in New York and your grandkid lives in San Diego.
Right. And you mentioned a little while ago the importance of dreaming with your grandchild. And I think that's a neglected act. I mean, not only with our grandkids, but with our kids and even, with people outside our families, that the importance of dreaming as part of passing along the faith and as part of living a Christian life. Can you talk, because I know that also plays into a lot of Matthew Kelly's ministry as well there at Dynamic Catholicism, the importance of having a dream and I guess articulating that dream and following after that dream. Can you talk a little bit more about the importance of dreaming?
Yeah, if you think about like the event, you know, that we're talking about at St. Rock on the 19th called Find Your Greatness, I mean, we all dream of greatness. And God has greatness in mind when he designs us. And So if that's the case, it's important to kind of dream and envision all along the way, even when you're 3 and 4 years old, even if some of those are far-fetched to an adult, it's teaching the child to begin to think, what do I want my life to look like? What kind of family do I want to have? What do I think God wants for me? And so as a grandparent, you're able to ask those questions all along the way, beginning with your grandchild when they're 3, all the way until they're 23 or 33. And to have sort of that be sort of the dream master, if you will, I guess. I hadn't really thought of that before, but of having that the grandchild knows that you're wanting to dream with them and asking those questions, and that you'll listen. I mean, we live in such a culture where listening is almost gone, and undivided attention is on its deathbed. So to be able to give your grandchild undivided attention and ask questions, open-ended questions, to allow them to dream a little bit about what they want their life to look like, what they think God has in mind for them, what does God hope for their life, what are their passions, and to listen and just be a sounding board for that, not trying to direct it too much, but just giving them undivided attention, unconditional love, and just that attentiveness, that listening that communicates to them, I love you, I care about you, and I'm dreaming with you, allows them to begin to kind of cast the direction for their lives.
You know, I don't know how many times I've heard priests make the comment that when they were a kid, one of the things they did when they were maybe 4, 5, 6 years old, they found themselves playing Mass.
Yep.
And they were playing the priest. And I can only imagine their parents, you know, either looking at that and thinking, oh, I don't know if I want him to be a priest, or yep, looking at that and going, oh, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? And so, you know, when you see your children, you see, you know, just the way they play, that's kind of expressing their dreams. What do they want to be when they grow up? What is impressing them right now? And how do we tap into that and, you know, let that grow in them?
That's a great observation, because one of the things I talk about in the book is that particularly for small kids, their world and their way of communicating is play. Fundamentally, that's where they live, and that's how they communicate. And so if you want to have a relationship with your grandchild, the best way to do that when they're little is to play with them, just to be there and to be a pretend character or puppets or whatever they're into, playing with balls in the backyard. That play is their language. And so you're helping them to discover themselves. And again, you're giving them that undivided attention where they're the only one who matters, that gives them that confidence to explore the world and to ask questions. And you discover a lot about them. Just what do they want to play? What are they expressing in that? And you're exactly right that for a lot of them, I've heard those exact same stories. They go to Mass and they say, I can see myself doing that. And they go home and they're pretending to play Mass and to encourage that and play with them, not to try to direct them into the priesthood, but to help them explore the beauty of the Eucharist, the beauty of the faith, and the beauty of the priesthood. And that's how you're very gently embedding the faith in them, so that it just kind of germinates there and springs up. It's not some day when you have to say, okay, now son or grandson, I need to sit you down and tell you everything you need to know about Catholicism, and you got to say yes. It's been part of the conversation all along the way, even all the way back into when they were 3 and 4 years old, they're playing. It's exactly right.
You know, you mentioned something there and about the beauty of the Eucharist and the fact that, you know, when you have a child who is playing Mass, and, you know, one of the things you'll always see them do is they've got the cup and they've got the bread. Now, one of the things that I've noticed, and I've heard this a number of times from those who have converted to Catholicism, is the draw of the Eucharist. I know it was a part of Mark's conversion, and from reading your book, Confessions of a Megachurch Pastor, I know it was a big part of yours. How is it that the beauty of the Eucharist is such a draw to those who are outside of the church and wanting to come in and join?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I was reflecting on that the other day, too, in terms of, you know, if you think about all the different kind of brands or strains of Protestant Christianity in America, and, you know, depending on whose numbers you use, there's well past 30,000, there's probably more than 50,000 at this point, kind of streams or strains of Protestant Christianity just in the U.S., and they all have their own understanding or their own convictions or beliefs about communion, or what you and I would call the Eucharist. And I was reflecting the other day, I wonder, these 500 years, when, you know, we just had the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther nailing the the 95 Theses on the door in Wittenberg back in 1517, and so Protestantism began. Over these 500 years, how was the central role of the Eucharist, how did it kind of fall by the wayside and almost just kind of get thrown out the window? I'm embarrassed almost to talk about it to some degree in terms of what a, not to be punny, but what a malnourished or malformed understanding I had of the Eucharist in my former life. And it was slowly over time in studying the faith, and it really was part of it was intellectual, but part of it was just a deep yearning in me to be as intimately connected to Jesus as I could possibly be. And there's nothing more intimate than his total self-giving to us of his own body and blood. And so slowly but surely kind of discovering that and beginning to read some of the famous places in Scripture like the Gospel of John chapter 6, where Jesus talks about the bread of life, beginning to read those in a completely different light with a totally different lens than I had when I was a Methodist pastor.
Yeah, I think that desire for the Eucharist can be a great starting point for evangelization, because I think it's something universally that all Christians feel. They want to be like Christ. You know, we kind of grow up, and the whole idea of what would Jesus do, I mean, that's very prevalent in just Christianity in general. And part of my conversion was that realization that if we truly want to be like Christ, that's not something we can do for ourselves. That's something that has to come from God himself. And the way that God ordained that to be was through the sacraments and through him giving himself to us in the Eucharist as himself, so that we could become like him as we receive the Eucharist and we receive that grace that comes through the sacraments, that transformative power of the Eucharist. You know, I remember, you know, kind of going through, and, you know, my wife's family was Lutheran and we kind of converted together. And I remember going through the whole process of thinking through, well, you know, when does the Eucharist become truly the body and blood of Christ? And realizing that, you know, for the Eucharist really truly to be the Eucharist, it has to come from some kind of priesthood. It has to come from something that was ordained by God. It can't come from the belief of us, because then that's us transforming Jesus, not Jesus transforming us. And like I said, I think, you know, the heart of evangelization is trying to encourage people to want to be more like Jesus, but then showing them how through the sacraments, that's the way that God laid it out. And it really can only be that way that it's ordained by God himself.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could talk, the Eucharist would be another good show so next time I'm in the cave.
Absolutely.
Because, in many ways, it's like the mortar that holds the church together. I think that's what distinguishes Catholicism from everything else in the world, is that it's that central gift of the Eucharist. It's the church's to give. It's not mine to claim or mine to receive. It's the church's to give. And I meet some of my former colleagues, Methodist pastors, say, why can't I receive communion in the Catholic Church? You know, that seems wrong. It seems unjust. It seems exclusive. I don't have a right to receive it. The church gives it. It belongs to the church and belongs to that through that apostolic succession, as you were just saying, Mark, and through the gift of Christ. It's not something that somehow I'm entitled to. It's the church's gift to us through it's Jesus' gift to us through the church.
And it's also Jesus' gift to the church through the transformative power of transforming us. And so we become the gifts back to our parish. And so, you know, we're kind of running out of time a little bit. So I want to draw us back a little bit to your conference that you're going to have here at St. Rock on the 19th. Talking a little bit more about, I guess, the transformative power of habitually living out sort of four central habits in your Catholic life. What are those four habits that you're going to be talking about at St. Rock on the 19th?
Yeah, and it's built on the fundamental idea that our lives change when our habits change. And so if our lives change when our habits change, embracing and living out the key spiritual habits are the ones that are going to change our spiritual life and thereby our whole life. So we'll zero in on those four life-changing habits that, in fact, Matthew talks about these in his book, Four Signs of a Dynamic Catholic. Prayer, a commitment to a daily routine of prayer, not just an occasional sporadic prayer, but a commitment to a daily routine of prayer, and then studying the faith and really learning to have the mind of Christ. Generosity, learning to understand that everything that I have, including my money, everything that I have actually belongs to God, and not only does it belong to God, I'm going to answer to God for what I do with it. So it's not mine to hang on to. What I have, including my time and my spiritual gifts and my finances, belongs to God, and He expects me and desires me to invest that in the kingdom. And then lastly is evangelization. If you want to get more of something, give it away. And so if you want more faith, begin giving your faith away to other people, and you'll be amazed at how much your faith begins to grow and to blossom and to expand in your life. So those four habits, and our lives change when our habits change. That's what we'll be doing on the 19th from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock at St. Rock's. It's going to be a fun day.
Yeah, should be a great day. Now, the one thing I want to bring up, and it's just a short observation, is the fact that, you know, I heard you and Mark both talk about, you know, the draw of the Eucharist, and I think that would be a great point of evangelization within the church, because I'm a cradle Catholic, and I know many who are cradle Catholics who don't have nearly the appreciation of the Eucharist that are, you know, our brethren who have come in from the Protestant denominations have. And it's really a shame if we, you know, it's opened my eyes when I see it through your eyes, through Mark's eyes, and through others who have come into the church. It gives me a fresh perspective on what a great gift this truly is. I mean, you know, when you're taught to receive communion at the age of 8, do you really have an appreciation for what it is? We need those reminders throughout our lives, and that's where great programs like Find Your Greatness can really wake us up and point us back to what we should have learned growing up. And, you know, maybe we did, maybe we didn't, but, you know, a refresher course is really necessary from time to time.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
All right, then we will take a break here, and we'll be back to wrap up the Catholic Cave. We'd like to thank Dr. Alan Hunt for joining us. Just a reminder, that program, Find Your Greatness, the Four Habits That Will Transform Your Life, will be held January 19th of this year, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. Rock Catholic Church. St. Rock is at 3600 South Pennsylvania Street, in Indianapolis, south side of Indianapolis. Best way I could describe it is Meridian and Sumner. It's right at that corner. Tickets are available. You can go to dynamiccatholic.com, or you can call 859-980-7900 to get your tickets. By all means, we hope you'll join us there. I plan on being there, and we're looking forward to a great day. Once again, thanks, Dr. Hunt, for joining us.
Thank you, Kent. Thank you, Mark. God bless y'all.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a website, CatholicRadioIndy.org, with access to great Catholic resources, including podcasts of all our local programming, podcasts that have been downloaded from all 50 states and over 40 countries on 6 continents. Yes, we are Catholic Radio Indy, but thanks to your support, we're taking the gospel of Christ to the ends of the earth. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
A new year brings opportunities for change. If one of your resolutions is to improve your spiritual life, the program Find Your Greatness from Dynamic Catholic may be just what you need. Dr. Alan Hunt will be presenting this plan for positive change at St. Rock Catholic Church on Saturday, January 19th, beginning at 9 a.m. Tickets are $25 each and can be purchased online at dynamiccatholic.com or by calling 859-980-7900.
Radio is one of the biggest tools that God uses to get truth and hope in life.
To get the truths and the promises of God
into the ears and the hearts of people driving around.
Into the hearts of people through these airways.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle. We just finished a wonderful interview with Dr. Alan Hunt from Dynamic Catholic. He'll be coming to Indianapolis in just about a week, in January 19th. At St. Rock Catholic Church. He'll be presenting find your greatness, looking at, you know, the things that, you know, we as Catholics can develop a better spirituality through certain habits.
Yeah, habits are so important. You know, the idea of living your life virtuously, you know, a virtue is a habit that over time you acquire through repeated action. And so, you know, it's not easy. You know, prayer, setting aside time to pray daily, study, setting aside time to read the Bible, to study the catechism, to have that habit of study, the practice of generosity, and really truly stewardship is a virtue of recognizing that the treasure that you have is given to you to be given back to the kingdom and to be used for kingdom work. And finally, that virtue of service, that being there to offer yourself to other people in a spirit of service and charity. Those are habits. Those aren't things that you instantly flip a switch and you have them. You have to practice them. And so, Dr. Hunt's talk on that, I hope will be enlightening, but I also hope it'll be encouraging. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It sounds like something that, you know, I've been through a number of parishes in my life, and I think every parish that I've ever been in needs a little push now and then. And early in the book, Dynamic Catholic, Dr. Matthew Kelly, who wrote the book, makes the comment that at any given parish, 7% of the people do 80% of the work and provide 80% of the funds. And part of the whole focus of Find Your Greatness and the Dynamic Catholic program is to say, okay, if this parish has 7% who are doing this, what if we could make that 8%? What if we could make that 9%? If we could just build 1% per year, think of the growth you could have in the ways of outreach, in the ways of evangelization, and, you know, in support for the parish and for all those things that are going on in a parish. It's one of those interesting things I've always noticed. You get the same 50 people in any parish who are doing everything.
Yep. And a lot of us have our own niches, and mm-hmm. we feel like we're doing a great job if we're doing, you know, the study, or if we're doing the prayer, but, you know, maybe we're not so good at the generosity part or the service part. And so, you know, I think part of it too is stretching ourselves to go beyond just those one or two areas that we might be part of that 8% in that one or two area, but then moving into the other areas and allowing ourselves to be challenged and grow into other areas that may not necessarily be what we feel is our calling.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever expected to be, you know, in that 8% in every area of working within a parish. You know, everyone has their gifts, everyone has their talents. And if we could just focus on those things, you know, for example, if we're looking at study. You know, some people are, you know, when you say Christian study, Catholic study, automatically we go to studying the Bible and studying the catechism. Well, there are hundreds and thousands of other great books out there. And, you know, honestly, the Bible can sometimes be a hard read, and the catechism, without a doubt, is a hard read. But if you want to learn more about Christ and learn more about his church, there are a ton of books out there that are just, you know, they're page turners. You open it up, you start to read, and you find yourself engrossed in it.
And not only that, but we need good Catholics involved in areas of study that we might consider secular. We need good, solid Catholic scientists. We need good, solid Catholic lawyers. You know, we interview those types of people on this show all the time. And that's part of study, using your gifts to bring glory to God and his church by being out in the secular world as a layperson.
You know, it's a challenge just to, you know, get those people lined up for this show sometimes, you know, because, you know, there are so many topics that we could deal with on a weekly basis. And, you know, in our discussion with Dr. Hunt earlier, throughout the discussion, if you noticed, every once in a while, he'd say, well, we could talk about that, but boy, that's another show. And every time he said that, I reached for my pen and wrote it down. And, you know, I have a feeling if we get the chance, we're going to be doing another show on those subjects as we go through. And, you know, And I'll toss this out as a request to all of our listeners. If by chance there's a topic that you're interested in or would like to have the cave investigate, by all means, let me know. Send us an email. Just send it to Kent, K-E-N-T, at CatholicRadioIndy.org. That's Kent, K-E-N-T, at CatholicRadioIndy.org. That'll get right to me. I'll pass it on to the other cavemen, and we'll take a look at those subjects that maybe you want us to take a look at and maybe do a show on. Maybe there's something of interest to you that we haven't covered, and we'll be more than happy to take a look at those here in 2019. That is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for the day. For Mark Tuttle, for Dr. Alan Hunt, I'm Kent Blanford, and until next time, may God bless. The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to Kent at CatholicRadioIndy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.